and welcome. Today is 3rd of July, 2012. I thought today we would talk about the essential subjects that one needs to understand in order to understand spirituality. Where did I get these five essential subjects? From here, from the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is the science of yoga. It's all there in one book. And it was spoken at a very climactic point when two armies were about to go to battle. And they were related. Cousins, uncles, grandfathers, brothers, the Pandavas on the one side and the Kauravas on the other. The Pandavas, the five Pandava brothers, were the rightful heirs to a kingdom. These were talking about kings, princes, Kshatriyas, warrior people, protectors of the people, governors. That's their nature. That's their place in society. And the Kauravas, the cousins, usurped the throne and the kingdom by nefarious means. Now, you don't hear that very often in political situations. Of course you do. It's throughout history. So it was a war, a battle on based on Dharma, spiritual principle. And it was a just battle because so many means had been used to stave off the battle, to make peace. Many diplomatic means, people going back and forth, a lot of effort was put into that. But it didn't work. So the last resort was to go to war and recoup the kingdom, get the kingdom back. The Kauravas, I don't remember the numbers, but I mean, we're talking about a million people on the battlefield. Huge numbers. Unbelievable numbers. And this actually took place 5,000 years ago at the close of the last yuga, of the last age, of the last era, which was the Dwapara Yuga, the Bronze Age. And it closed out that yuga, and that then ushered in the current age, which is Kali. Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel, hypocrisy, indolence, lethargy, madness, illusion, indolence, laziness. Where people who are not qualified for positions will find themselves in the positions for which they're not qualified. This is very common in the current age. Have you seen any signs of it? I'd say the entire parliament here in Ireland is a good example, if not the entire one, most of it. But then again, I don't want to say just Ireland. There's many places like that. It's the same in America. So the battle was fought 5,000 years ago. The Kauravas, who had usurped the throne, their army was seven times the size of the Pandava army. It was 7-1, the ratio. Is that right? Do you remember? something like that. It was like not 2-1, not 3-1. It was huge.
They're outnumbered
dramatically. But on the side of the Pandavas, they had Krishna. And so what would be the advantage of having Krishna? Because Krishna, who was a prince among them, among the princes, had his own kingdom. They said, will you fight? And he said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give, because he was related to both sides, he says, I will give one side me. I'll come and be on the one side, but I won't fight. You won't fight? No, I won't fight. I'll drive a chariot. And, or the other side, one side can have my armies, huge armies. So, what would you pick? Well, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is Vishnu. He's God. So, the Kauravas had first choice, and they... Actually, Arjuna had first choice, and so Duryodhana, who was one of the head Kaurava, thought that, oh, God, I won't get what I want. Arjuna's going to take the armies. But he didn't. He took Krishna to drive his chariot. And Duryodhana, the Kaurava guy, sort of the villain in the story, he got the armies, which is just what he wanted. So they were at this climactic point where the armies were arrayed, and Arjuna says to Krishna, will you please pull my chariot between the two armies? I want to see who has come to fight. And when he saw who had come to fight, and that his grandfather was on the other side, his guru, the one who taught him archery and war strategy, he was there. And so many people that were part of his childhood, in his upbringing, they were all there arrayed against them. So he faltered. Now, it's to be understood that actually Arjuna, the prince, and Krishna are none other than Nara and Narayan Rishi, the two sages. Narayan is God himself, and Nara, and these two sages would be up in the Himalayas practicing austerities and meditation, perhaps even today, if you could see them. So Arjuna really didn't become bewildered, but Krishna bewildered him so he could speak the Bhagavad Gita. That was the plan, to bewilder him. So Arjuna would say, look, I can't fight. It doesn't make sense to me. I can't kill my relatives. And what would the point be? Even if I killed them all and I became victorious and I won the kingdom, I'd feel miserable. You can't do that. It's just not right. My grandfather's arrayed against me. No, I can't do it. And he dropped his bow, decided he wouldn't fight. So this gave Krishna an opportunity to enlighten him, because he needed enlightenment. So when are we most prime for enlightenment? When we're at our highest point? When we're cruising? Or when we're at our lowest point? Obviously, your lowest point. Because pretty much I'll listen to anything at this point in time because I don't know what to do. I'm bewildered, I'm confused, I'm unhappy, I'm full of sorrow. Anybody ever been in that point in your lifetime? Mm-hmm. I have. So that is a key point, point in time, because you are the most receptive. If you're paying attention, you'll be the most receptive. So it was perfect. So Krishna spoke the entire Bhagavad Gita, which is the science of yoga. So there are five elements or subject matters in the Bhagavad Gita. They are Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma. So Ishvara means God. Jiva means souls. The rest of us, we're jivas. Prakriti means nature. But more the sense of material nature. This nature that we're in. Not just Mother Nature, but the nature of things. And Kala is?
Time
factor. Because here in this world, everything is demarcated by
time.
Is there time in the spiritual world? Do you use time? No. Here we have past, present, future. In the spiritual world we have? Now. We have the eternal present. Here we can look back, we can look forward. Most of us, we're too busy looking back and looking forward. We miss this moment. Right? The be here now concept. So time is very important, and to understand how time works and how it's divided, extremely important. And then finally, karma. Karma means?
Deeds.
Work, action, and what's the flip side? Karma, reaction, and?
Reaction.
So that's the complete cycle of karma. What goes around?
Comes around.
Any society in the world, even if it is a so-called primitive society out in the middle of the jungle, knows what goes around comes around. Everybody knows that. Because that's how things work. Okay, so first of all, we have Ishvara. Ishvara is God, the God principle, the divine principle, the creator, the supreme being, or the scientists like to call it the antimatter particle. That's what they like to call them. So I just read an article where they're on the verge of proving the antimatter particle exists. Okay. Good luck with that. Let us know when you nail that one down so we can all share in it. You know, some things are just painfully obvious and some people just can't see them in spite of a PhD education. Maybe it's because of the PhD education. Sometimes that can get in the way. So according to Vedic understanding, God is realized in three features. We've talked about this many times. We talked about this the other day. Vedanti tattva vidas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. So God is realized in three features: Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Brahman is energy. Everything is pervaded by divine energy. In Catholicism, we call it the what?
Holy Ghost,
Holy Spirit. So that's the energetic aspect of God. And the next level up is diversity. And you'll see God in all these different forms, like you and you and you and you and you and you. And this is the Paramatma feature. Inside each person, you've got a physical body, You've got a subtle body. Sukshma sharira. What do you call physical?
Jivatma.
No, the physical body. What's the Sanskrit for physical? Deha. Deha sharira. Sukshma sharira. Subtle body. And atma. And the soul. So the physical body, you know what that is. Five elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. The subtle body, the sukshma sharira, is made up of what? Three things.
Ego.
Correct. That's the third one. First one? Mind. Then? Intelligence. Discrimination. Discriminative faculty. Intelligence. And ego. That's the subtle body. That's what travels to the next life. The subtle body. When you slough off the walnut shell. And then Atma. Atma is soul. Can anything live without a soul?
No.
Can anything grow without a soul? Can anything grow in the womb without a soul?
No.
No. Nice try though. Can't. In each person, in each living being, not just person, blade of grass. Well, wait, I better hang on here. Blade of grass, I'm not sure about the blade of grass. Within each person, there is an Atma and a Paramatma. Atma is same as Jiva, soul. That is your spiritual identity, your spiritual individuality. And there is Parama Atma, supreme soul, super soul. Who's that? That's God, Krishna. It's God the witness. What's he doing in there? Just watching. Is he interfering? Is he a bit of a manipulator? No. Not at all. You mean I can get up to any kind of nonsense I want and he won't bother me? Correct. You can. But somebody's keeping track. You can bet on that. So, it's explained so nicely in the Upanishads that it's like two birds in a tree. And one bird, the jiva, is enjoying the fruits of the tree, the berries or the fruits, whatever's there growing on the tree, as we are enjoying so many different things here in the material world. And the Paramatma, the manifestation of God as witness, Sakshi, is just watching. And he's waiting. He's watching, he's waiting. What's he waiting for? He's waiting for one thing in particular.
Be recognized.
Correct. For you to go like this. Oh, when did you get here? And he says, I've been here all along. Well, I never noticed you. No, you were too busy out there with your fruits, your desires, all the stuff your list, all the stuff you need to do and have and enjoy. And yeah.
I'm sorry, I was hungry.
I had all these hungers. So, Paramatma and Atma. So, that is the second stage, is realizing that God is in everyone and everything. Not just energy, but diversity. And the third stage is Bhagawan. That means God as a person. Was it you and I were talking the other day and I gave you the example?
Yeah.
So if you have somebody that you admire, you have your hero, maybe they're a singer or maybe they're an educator, maybe they're a writer, a poet, I mean it could be anything. And you just think this person is wonderful, and you follow this person. And you know, one of the greatest things that would make your day, if you could meet this person, this would be the greatest thing. So you get an invitation to go to their compound, their estate, their place. And when you first enter, you don't see anybody. You just see their place, the garden, the yard. You go in the house, and now you're in your hero's house. You see how it's decorated. You see the art on the walls. You see the mementos, the awards, the guitars hanging on the wall, whatever it might be. The,
you can't imagine.
And you see, this is, you know, and there's this picture or her picture with all these different people. So what is this? What level is this? This is the energy of the person. It's just the energetic level. Is it impressive? Oh, yeah. It's impressive. Can you do better? Oh, yeah. We can do better. Because then in walks three or four people. There's his wife. There's his cook. There's his best friend. There's his driver. And they sit down and they start talking and telling you all these stories. And what happened this time, and no one's ever, you couldn't read any of these stories. These are intimate, personal details. So now you're dealing with the diversity. You're dealing with the different people who know him intimately. So this takes you to the next level. Isn't this richer and more satisfying than just looking at everything? That's the second level. And then the third level, Bhagavan. Guess who walks in the room? Dear man, himself. And he meets you, and you sit down, you have a chat. He orders some iced tea for you. And you get to ask him whatever you want. He gives you a tour, shows you everything, and says, well, look, the next time you come, we'll do such and such. The next time I come? Okay. So which level's the best? Obviously, the Bhagavan level. When you enter into a loving relationship with God, you can't love energy. There's no reciprocation. Love requires a subject and an object. You're the subject, it needs an object in order to reciprocate. So that's why the personal level of understanding is much higher. And the energy, you can, all of it is God realization. All of it is liberation. The soul becomes liberated. And, I mean, you have to be very advanced spiritually to attain any of the levels. But this is how Ishvara is manifest on these three levels. You can say, well, I don't, you know, some people, believe that being an individual only exists down here in the material world. And it does not exist in the spiritual world. Spiritual world means the opposite of that. So if individuality is here, then up there there is no individuality. We all merge together. We are drops of water in the same ocean. We're just bobbing along. And that is how it is on the energetic level. But there are many reports of people getting a little bit bored with that. Not people, jivas, souls getting a little bit bored because there's not much action there. And then coming back down, there's more action here. The Buddhists are famous for that. The lamas and They could always come back down to help people. There's not much going on in Nirvana. You say, oh, this is Nirvana. Oh, cool. It's great. Is there anything going to happen? No, just Nirvana. Cessation of existence. But the higher understanding is that we do not lose our individuality. We lose our temporary identity, temporary personality, the one we have now. And if you're a man and you're born in Ireland and you do such and such, and but you may not be that eternally, obviously. But there is an eternal spiritual identity. So that's what you step into or come to realize.
It's like aspects of your own personality.
Yeah. They're certainly connected, okay, and certainly related. And there would be behaviors that would be similar. And of course, all these experiences are for the benefit of the soul. Mm. So that you learn and expand expand your consciousness. So, yeah, it's definitely connected. But we don't lose the individuality. I mean, unless you want to. You can sort of merge into something and forget who you are. There are many people who do not like. If you're miserable in the material world, then you might be inclined towards self-abnegation, to rub out the self. And that will be very attractive to a lot of people. You know, I wasn't treated well, I was never happy, I never got any recognition. You know, self-abnegation down on this plane, the ultimate example of that is suicide. What is suicide but wiping out the self? So there's a kind of a spiritual suicide if you want to merge into the oneness. Okay, so that's Ishvara. Any questions about Ishvara? Okay. Next one is Jiva. Well, we kind of covered Jiva to a certain extent. But let's cover it this way. And Prakriti is the material energy. There actually are two energies of the Godhead. And they, it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita that one is superior and one is inferior. And and the superior energy is called the internal energy of God because it is purely spiritual. And the inferior energy is called the external energy of God because it is purely material. That is this world. This is the external energy. The jivas, the souls, are spiritual energy, right? Well, how do we know that? Because there are three symptoms of spirituality that you'll find in all these levels of Godhead. You'll find in the jivas. What are they? Three symptoms. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat means eternity. Chit means
consciousness,
knowledge. I'm sorry?
Understanding.
But complete understanding. Well, you know everything. And Ananda.
Bliss.
Unadulterated bliss. Why? Because you got a new car? No. No. Because you fell in love? Got a new girl? New guy? No. Just cause. Just because that is the nature of the soul, to be blissful. Okay? So, those are the three symptoms of spirituality. So the jiva is part and parcel of God, of spirit. So the jiva also has those symptoms as part of its nature. But the jiva is beautifully explained as tatastha shakti. Tatastha, borderline. Tatastha shakti. So, well, it means like, yeah, on the edge. Why? Because we're spiritual, we have souls, but we're covered by matter, right? So it's like going down to the ocean, to the beach, to the shoreline. And the shoreline, what is the shore? Is it water or is it earth?
Mixture.
It's a mixture. One minute it's sand, the next minute it's water, the next minute it's earth again, sand again. So this is the jiva. One minute he's covered over by matter, he's matter, and the next minute he's identified with spirit. So this is borderline existence. Whereas nature, material nature, is all material. It never becomes spiritual. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
It's like being all creatures. It's like creatures as well.
Creatures as well.
Yeah.
Creatures as well.
So animals don't have a soul. Animals don't have a soul.
Animals have a soul. Everything. But the difference between us and humans and birds, beasts, animals, plants, is we have free will. And we have consciousness. They don't. In other words, they have to act according to their instinct. A dog will act like a dog when?
All the time.
All the time. Have you ever seen a dog act like a cat? No. It doesn't happen, right? So we're humans. We can act like humans. We can act like gods. Or we can act like animals, like dogs. Correct?
Correct.
It's a choice. You know? We've probably done a little bit of all of it, I'd say. I don't want to, you know, accuse anybody. I know I've flirted in all three realms in this life. So that's the difference. We have free will. We can behave like whatever we want. We're humans, generally, trying to raise ourselves up to become gods, to become divine beings, enlightened beings. And if that wasn't true, you wouldn't be sitting in this room. You wouldn't be. Because this would hold no interest for you whatsoever. You'd be down at the local, watching the match. Which is fine, but that's what humans do. Right? Okay, so that's jiva. Am I missing anything about jiva? You know, jivas are present everywhere. There are jivas everywhere, even ones that we cannot see. Like we can see a blade of grass, and we know that there's a soul in it because it's alive and growing. But there are also jivas everywhere. The spiritual sky is spiritual sky, meaning the Brahman level, the first level, the energetic level, is filled with jivas. I mean, millions upon millions.
Bacteria, viruses, film. Bacteria, virus.
Yeah, you got jivas in bacteria, in amoebas. Those are jivas. Some of them live in stool. They think that's pretty good. What a great spot. Look what we found. A fresh pie, cow pie. Can you believe our luck? What about the dung beetle? He rolls up the thing and he heads on down the road with this ball of dung. Come on, he hit.
And that's their food.
Yeah, that's their food.
He hit the jackpot.
Hit the jackpot. Yeah, especially with cow's dung because it's antiseptic. So, yeah, isn't it strange, huh? We look at that and go, oh my God, you know, how can something live in stool? Well, there are higher beings up there looking down at you going like, oh my God, what's he doing? It's very relative. It's very relative. Okay, so does Jiva have a beginning? You have a beginning when you take birth from your mother's womb. In this lifetime, in this identity, in this body, you have a beginning, you have a middle, you have an end.
Yeah.
Does a Jiva, does your soul have a beginning?
No.
No. Does God have a beginning?
No.
By definition, God has no beginning, no middle, no end. That's the definition. And you say, oh, no, it's got to have a beginning somewhere. No, that's our limited concept. We cannot understand certain concepts.
True, is that why we call or refer to him as unborn?
Unborn, yeah. He's Aja, unborn. A-J-A. That's how you spell it. Aja.
That's good.
Ja means?
Ja.
Born.
Birth.
A-J-A. A-J-A means not. Aja.
Aja. Yes.
There's a beautiful name for lotus. For the lotus flower. Lotus flower's got so many names. There's got maybe like 30 names. Beautiful names.
Pankaja.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Pankaja.
Pankaja means born from the
mud.
From the mud. Punk.
Pankaja.
Mud. So, I mean, it's just Sanskrit in itself is, that's a whole other high. Believe me. You study Sanskrit. It's
more,
very, very exciting.
More suitable language for computers.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Really, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I've read that.
This is NASA did a research on the fund.
Now, what's the name of the Sanskrit language? Do you know? There's a name of it.
The language of the gods. Pashadeva,
what's it called? No, I never heard that. Well, I didn't. I'm just telling you. I never heard it.
I was going to say, the Sanskrit teacher taught me that.
Well, that's good, because I never heard it. Devanagari.
Devanagari.
Deva
Nagari. I knew that.
Gods, yes. And Nagari means? City.
City, yeah.
Cities of the gods. Language that is spoken in the cities of the gods. It's a divine language.
So should we all know that when we're going back to...
Well, it would certainly help, wouldn't it? What if the password is in Sanskrit? Then what? Yeah, and you arrive and they go, what's the password?
If they said it in Sanskrit, you wouldn't understand them anyway, so...
We read some wonderful things. Where did I put that?
Maybe we do remember when we...
There's some folders on my desk. The one of the brown ones are kind of reddish brown. Can you just bring those and then I can find it? Please, thank you. Okay, so where are we at here? Jiva... And, yeah, I think we covered Jiva. So Jiva is eternal. No beginning. The Jiva becomes covered over by material energy. Thank you. Yeah, I think that's it. Jiva becomes covered over by material energy and he forgets his real identity. So when we are striving for realization of self, Atma Tattva, are we trying to become spiritual? Is that technically what we're doing? Are we becoming spiritual? Are we becoming enlightened? No. Correct. We're remembering. We're already that. But we're covered over. If you drop your diamond ring in the mud and it disappears, is it any less of a diamond? No. It's still a diamond. So you have to dig in the mud, find it, bring it out. It's covered in mud now. And you clean it off. There's your diamond. Is it shining? Yeah. Once you clean it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the same thing. The same thing as the soul. The soul is the diamond. And it gets covered over. Same idea. I got this book I ordered. These are near-death experiences. There's countless ones. I don't like the book because it's written by this doctor who has no belief in anything. So whenever somebody says something that is even remotely spiritual, he goes into his scientist proof mode, you know. Which to me is, I just don't read those parts. I just cut to all the near-death experiences because they're really good. So here's one here. Because this really gives you some beautiful insight. Roger was returning from Quebec City with a friend when they lost control of the car they were driving and slammed head-on into another vehicle. Roger immediately left his body. What's leaving the body? The subtle body. Sukshma Sharira. What's the subtle body composed of? Mind, intelligence, ego, and the soul is going to travel with it too. Right? You got soul, you got subtle body, you got gross body. The subtle body or the astral body looks exactly the same as the physical body, only it's etheric. But it's the spinning image, because the physical body is fashioned on the subtle body as the blueprint, as the template. That's how it... What?
Is that usually referred to like the same as blue?
Bluish, yeah, bluish-grayish.
Yeah, like a smoky.
Smoky, yeah, correct. And the subtle body is attached to the physical body, how? Silver cord from the navel, the umbilicus, from the subtle, sukshma. And how long does this cord reach? 10 feet? 12? It's like a bungee. It goes, there's no limit, right? And what happens at death with this cord? Finished. That's death. Cut that cord and you're off to the next location. Right?
But it's only cut from the physical body.
Yes. Correct.
So the subtle body goes with it.
The subtle body and the soul goes on to the next reality, the next plane, the next dimension. You don't necessarily come back right away.
But if the physical body resembles the subtle body, and if we don't come back straight away, if we come back in, I don't know, 200, 300 years' time, do we mirror that? Does the subtle body, is it practically the same as the previous body we had?
No. Because when you are born, this physical form mirrors the subtle body. It is its blueprint. Hang on.
She wants to know if it was another version I heard 200 years ago.
Then, well, let me first explain this, and then if I'm not explaining it to you.
Okay.
Then, throughout life, based on your karma, your work, your behavior, your subtle body will begin to change,
okay,
to morph into what you're going to be in your next lifetime. You can go up or down the species. There's no such thing as, oh, no, I'm human, I'm going to go up. If you're acting like a dog, excuse me, you'd be better off in a dog body. It's much better. You see people, and they look like the animal they will become in their next life. You have all seen it. And you go like, that guy looks just like a hog. Yes, he's working on it. He is in preparation. He's apprenticing. Correct?
There's so. A lot of rodents.
I remember seeing this.
A lot of rodents.
He looks like a rabbit.
If somebody works their way up to being a human, does everyone start off as an animal, like, and then their soul moves up? And then they get to a point where you can move all the way back down?
Yeah, you start off on a low level and you work your way up in consciousness. But it's not like you have to work your way through every single species. There are 8,400,000 species in the universe. So, you know, I'm not exactly clear on which ones you have to.
How can you manage to work your way up and then manage to go back down again after you've learned all the lessons of the Bible?
Because here you are, human being, highest form of life. Why? Because you can liberate yourself from samsara. Repeated birth and death. Can animals liberate themselves from samsara?
No.
Can plants? No. You need a human form. So now you're in human form, and you get all seduced and giddy over sensual enjoyment. And you go in that direction. So, I mean, human form doesn't necessarily mean that you've got spiritual consciousness. That is developed in human form.
So it's just an opportunity.
It's an opportunity. And then you got to make use of it. You know, that's why people, for example, who may not be very spiritual, but they're very generous and kind. And they help people. They do things for people. I know a lot of, I've met many atheists, including atheistic doctors, who are working for the benefit of the greater good, to help people. They don't believe in God, but they believe in humanity and doing good things. Well, what's going to happen to them? They're going to come back with another good birth, guaranteed. If you're helping people, you're going to get a good birth, no question, because you're serving. Now, they won't get off the wheel of samsara. That's not possible. Because they have no concept of it. Okay? So let's get back to Roger here. He just had a head on. So here's Roger. You know, we got to get to him pretty fast here. Come on. Here's Roger. Quote, I went into a dark place with nothing around me, but I wasn't scared. It was really peaceful here. There. I then began to see my whole life unfolding before me like a film projected on a screen, from babyhood to adult life. It was so real. I was looking at myself, but better than a 3D movie, as I was also capable of sensing the feelings of the persons I had interacted with through the years. That's the difference. They say this time and time and time again in these experiences. Now they can feel what they've done in the life to others and how others felt. I could feel the good and bad emotions I made them go through. I was also capable of seeing that the better I had made them feel and the better the emotions they had because of me, the more credit or karma I would accumulate. The more good karma or credit I would accumulate. And that the bad emotion would take some of that back, would reduce it. Just like in a bank account. But here it was like a karma account, to my knowledge. Just like a bank account. So if you do this, and this is what the guy saw in his near death. If you do this much good and you do this much bad, you got all that positive karma. So tell me what your life will be like in your next life.
Good.
Grace.
Pretty good. Pretty super. And you only got this much negative to deal with. So we'll sprinkle that around. You know, throw that in a Rahu period or Saturn period or something. Right?
That's a good way.
Yeah. Okay, that's Roger.
Change after it.
Oh, most all of them change. Yeah, huge. No, most of them change permanently. Most of them, it just changes everything. And I mean, it's, you know, people that were fearful, they're no longer fearful.
Yeah, I defend you. I didn't know because we got back in touch with her recently, over in the last few months, and I was trying to work out. I was like, she returns my phone calls. She's very pleasant. She's fearless. And it wasn't until I had a few drinks and she told me her near-death experience. She drowned nearly. Well, she had to be resuscitated back in the water in Australia. And this Maori guy came out of nowhere, picked her up out of the water, and resuscitated her. I was like, ah.
Yeah, Maori might have been a guardian angel.
Yeah.
He brought her onto the beach, and then all of a sudden, Mari was gone. No one could find her.
I believe that one day when she drowned, she said her hand actually came out of the water. Of it, no person, and pulled her out. Yeah.
Okay.
Does the book just give their stories, their near-death stories, or does it talk about their life?
It doesn't say a lot about their lives. Maybe say a couple of lines about their lives. I think this is one here that Linda had made a medication mistake. Nurse Miriam. Thinking she was supposed to take 8 tablets at once, rather than 8 over the course of a day. As prescribed by her doctor, Linda passed out on her bed and then passed over. Must have been pretty good drugs, I'd say. At that moment, I'm not sure... This is Linda. At that moment, I'm not sure exactly when someone or something began giving me an examination of conscience. And in the blink of an eye, images from my life began passing before me, beginning with childhood. Each image had its counterpart, or as if the actions of my life were being put into a balance. Everything I ever thought, did, said, hated, helped, did not help, should have helped, was shown in front of me. The crowd of hundreds and everyone like in a movie. How mean I'd been to people. How I could have helped them, how mean I was, unintentionally also to animals. I fell on my face in shame. I saw how my acting or not acting rippled in effect toward other people and their lives. It wasn't until then that I understood how each little decision or choice affects the world. There's one more, I think. Oh, yeah, this one is good. This is the last one. A woman we will call Hafur for from Colombia, had a near-death experience that allowed her to see her life reviewed several times. It gave her insight into what was important in her life. She says, "The figure on my right who was guiding me stopped and I could not see his face, as though we were at a small enclosed beach. There was a hill that served as a place for projecting my life from beginning to end several times." So that was the screen, the hill. "At first rapidly and afterward more slowly. It was amazing how my life was shown with events I had completely forgotten about and others that were so insignificant that it felt like I was seeing each frame of the personal movie of my life on Earth. I realized that I understood everything with great clarity and super lucidity." See, even on that level, your understanding goes way beyond this level. You know, there's some people in here say, "Look, you know, I'm not a scientist. I don't have a PhD in physics, but I understood all exactly what physics was about." You understand everything because you know where everything fits in the scheme of things. Even on this subtle plane, astral plane. This is an astral plane. Well, maybe it's a little higher because they're dealing sometimes with higher beings. But it's not the spiritual world. That's what I'm getting at. Okay. "I discovered that I had personally chosen to take on a physical body and have the life experiences I was having. I realized that I had wasted time in suffering. And what I should have been doing was using my freedom to choose true love and not pain in all that came into my life. I had wasted my time in suffering. I had chosen suffering instead of choosing freedom and joy. I absorb myself in suffering." Big revelation. There. Suffering's optional. Suffering's optional. I have found in astrology, which, you know, I've done for 35 years, that when you learn difficult lessons, you know, different planetary periods will bring difficulties, challenges, obstacles, stumbling blocks, reversals, loss. When you learn the lesson underlying the experience, like say Rahu brings that, or Saturn, or Mars, then the next time those periods come around, you won't suffer like that. They won't bring like they did before. In fact, you can get to the point where they're actually just positive. There won't be any negative. Why? Because you learned the lesson. There's no need. There's no need to spank the child if the child is doing what you've asked the child to do. There's no spanking. Right? Same idea. Why do you need to be hit with the stick when you've already coughed on? You've gotten the point. Right? Ishvara Jiva Prakriti. Prakriti is nature. So we talked about internal and external, spiritual nature, material nature. And Prakriti is divided, as it's so beautifully explained in the Bhagavad Gita. If you learn one thing in this book and nothing else, then learn about the modes of nature. Three modes of nature: sattva, rajas, tamas. Goodness, passion, ignorance. Contentment, desire, delusion. That's the three modes of nature. Everything and everybody falls under the modes of nature. When you understand how the modes of nature work, you will understand how everything works and why people behave in a certain way. even how Mother Nature works. Rajas is creation. Sattva, Rajas meaning the mode of passion, is creation. Sattva, the mode of goodness, is maintenance.
Sorry, it's my fault.
And tamas is, the mode of ignorance is destruction. So things come into being, they last for a time. Coming into being is rajas. Lasting for a time, mode of goodness, sattva, and then dwindling, dying off, coming to an end, tamas. That's everything, right there. So when you come to understand the modes of nature, you will understand everything. I won't dwell on that much. You can speak about that for hours. Okay. So Prakriti, internal, external energy. In the external energy, we've got the three modes of nature. We are all under the influence of the external energy, the material energy. Unless and until what? As long as the bird on the tree, the two birds, as long as the bird on the tree is busy engaging in the fruits, in the material world, he is under the influence of material nature. He's generating karma. Until he sees the Supersoul, God, and he starts to act in accordance with the higher will, God's will, in an attitude of supplication, service, wanting to become closer to God, closer to the higher truth. And once you do that, are you still under the influence of the material energy? No. No. It says here. No. Now you're under the influence of the spiritual energy. Can you, if somebody looks at you, can they see it? No. You can't see it. It looks like you're doing everything like you always do, like everybody does. But you're no longer under the influence of the material energy. You're under the influence of the spiritual energy. God has taken you under his wing. It says that over and over and over again in here, in different places.
Could I ask that on commentary in that book? It says the only way you can follow God's will is if you have a bona fide spiritual master to actually tell you what to do. Or do I pick up that wrong? Or do you have to have someone that's...
Well, you know, there's different levels of that. You have a spiritual master by reading the commentaries. There's a spiritual master. There's an instructing spiritual master and an initiating spiritual master. You know, traditionally in India, you would have a Diksha Guru, somebody who would initiate you. That's what you're talking about the other day. You know, right now I am serving for an hour as your Shiksha Guru, your instructing person. So that is a guru figure too. I mean, anybody who teaches you anything about spirituality is your Shiksha Guru. He's taught you something you didn't know. Okay. Yeah, ideally, if you can find somebody that you want to put yourself in their hands, then, yeah, that is part of the tradition. But I wouldn't be going putting myself in somebody's hands if if you didn't think you should be in their hands.
It's very difficult to find.
It's not so easy to find.
The right guru.
Huh?
The right guru.
The right Diksha Guru. Especially in this age.
Today is a Guru Purnima.
Today is Guru Purnima. Yeah.
That means I'm weighing up my good karma. I don't want to do that. So will I just start to...
You're weighing up your good karma because you're trying to be nice to them.
Well, I'm trying to
undo
my stuff that I've possibly done in the past. But can I skip all that and just go to God and just go?
Yes, yes. You don't have to do the 12 steps program. Alcoholics Anonymous is no. You don't have to. That's not. Alcoholics Anonymous will tell you that that is the only way you can do it. There is no other way in the world.
I don't want to open up seven channels and go, hey, I've had fun talking to you.
No, you don't have to do that. The most important thing is in your heart that you're truly remorseful. Now, you can also, in your heart, in your mind, ask that person for forgiveness. You can do that. You don't have to call them up. You don't have to reopen the wound or have a confrontation or have somebody bite your head off. There's no need. And the most important thing is sincerity and your intention. What is your intention? God, you don't have to ask God for forgiveness, because God won't be offended by you. He's too far beyond, above all that. It's not God, and God will give you forgiveness in a heartbeat. It's the other person, but it's mostly you who won't give yourself forgiveness. And that's what I've seen countless times, hundreds and hundreds of times, astrologically. With people who have done bad deeds in a past life. They come into this life, they are carrying tremendous guilt. Consciously? No. Unconsciously. How do we know they are? Well, I mean, you could see it in the chart. And then they create for themselves all kinds of punishment and self-undoing and victimization. And all these things. I just got off the phone with somebody. Unbelievable, the story she was telling me. You know. The first husband tried to steal. She started this business, became extremely successful in Beverly Hills. And the husband, he tried to usurp her business. He tried to take it over, bounce her out. And when she caught him, you know, he was embezzlement, etc. Then he strangled her and tried to kill her. And then got rid of him and attracted a new business partner. And he tried to steal a business. When she was in Bali, he told everybody that she was no longer in business. I'm in business now. It's like one story after another, you know. Because this person needs to be punished, but really needs to be forgiven. But they must forgive themselves, you know. When is time served enough? When will you let yourself off the hook? When will you stop attracting victimizers in your life? We've spoken about this many times. There's only three things you can be in the world. Only three. You can be the victim, or the victimizer, or the victor. The vast majority, 95% plus, are victims and victimizers. Can you be both? Oh, yes. You can, depending. And the victor, the minority of people, what's the definition of a victor? A victim, victimizer, you know what that is. A victor is somebody who victimizes no one, and is victimized by no one. This we call win-win situation.
See,
and that's where you need to be.
I think this is also for your question as well. Like sometimes unconsciously we want to do the good, we're doing the things we don't know. That's how the guru actually leads you the path of that, you know.
When you need instruction.
Yeah. So he can give you the direction, okay, this way you go, just like a step now, here, tom-tom.
Yeah, what should I do in this situation? Yeah. I mean, knowledge is there. I mean, you can find pretty much whatever you need there, but will you find it? Or, I mean, people are humans, they need interaction.
I think our materialist, over the definition of a guru is not just teacher. I think all this ancient story in India, the guru is like a, it just show you the path of divinity, and he also teaches you the other stuff, but how can I say that? I don't know.
It's human positive. He's a guide, yeah.
Yeah, guides you, yes, of course. And then, I mean, answer to you, but you say that you want to give her answer intentions. Like, yeah. You don't going to go to people, because I have created bad karma, how can I do that? Just because it's just like a fear of karma, you want to say sorry because it's a fear of karma. You know, it should be, as you say that, it should be in your heart, okay, intentions.
Yeah, yeah, don't be afraid of karma. Your desire should be to admit your fault. And you should feel remorse for having hurt people, having caused suffering. Okay, so jiva, prakriti, kala, and karma. Kala's time. By understanding time, you understand how the universe works. You understand the four yugas or eras, the Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, and the Iron Age. So we are now in the Iron Age, Age of Kali, for 432,000 years, of which 5,000 have passed. We only have 427,000 years left. Within that time, there is a resurgence, or if you like, a golden age that is occurring, and there is a regeneration of consciousness and spirituality within the Iron Age. But the Iron Age is still moving forward. It's not like it's stopping. As you can see by reading the front page of the newspaper, it's going on, and it's creating destruction in people's lives. And things are getting worse in certain ways. But within that, there is a resurgence or regeneration of consciousness and spirituality.
Now.
For 10,000 years.
When did it start?
500 years ago. So.
Is that when
Chaitanya? So we're here to catch.
The Renaissance.
Yeah. We're here to catch that wave. That's why we're here. Take advantage. But I wouldn't recommend you come back time and time again to Earth over the next 427,000 years because the outlook isn't great.
What are the conditions?
Does that age serve a purpose, though? Are the people coming in for it? Well, people for spiritual advancement. Is it good for anything?
It's good for spiritual advancement because you can make spiritual advancement very quickly and easily.
Now.
Under, yes, in the Iron Age, because there's so much difficulty. Everything is geared against spiritual advancement and spirituality. No one's really interested. So, you know, how many people, if you want to sit down and have a conversation about spirituality, how many people are interested? Very, very few. Very few. And this is true for all of us who have had this experience. Very few. So, if you practice spirituality in this age, in the golden age where people live for 100,000 years and the consciousness is high and everybody's into spirituality, that is the time for meditation practice. Yoga practice, meditation, where you can sit for hours on end and meditate because everybody's geared for it. You can do that now, but it's much harder to do it. And the mind is very unsettled in this age, in case you hadn't noticed. Then in the Silver Age, they would do elaborate sacrifices. So if you think the Golden Age would be the age of the Brahmins or the enlightened souls, then the meditation fits that. The next age, the Silver Age, would be the age of the Kshatriyas, or the princes, the kings, and they would do elaborate sacrifices, spiritual ceremonies with the sacred fire, And a lot of paraphernalia would be required, and a lot of money would have to be spent, and these sacrifices would go on for many, sometimes, you know, a year. And that was the Dharma of that age. So you could get a priest to do a sacrifice for you, and you'd have to pay X amount and gather up these different ingredients for the sacrifice. That was the Dharma for that age. Then in the Bronze Age, which we could equate to Vaishyas, or roughly to business people and merchants, and that in that age it's temple worship, worshiping God in the temple. Now that still goes on now, you have churches and temples, and there's much of that still there. And that was the Dharma of that age. And the current age, the Dharma is chanting, is saying the names of God. So we can equate that to the Shudras, or, you know, sort of the common people, the lowest on the scale. Because this is the easiest thing to do. Mm-hmm. Anybody can chant the names of God. Which names? Whichever names you like. It doesn't have to be one particular religion. You can chant Hare Krishna, or Nittai Gauranga, or, you know, Sri Ram Jai Ram, or whatever it might be. Or you can chant Allahu Akbar, whatever you like. But now is the age of chanting, and it's very easy to make advancement, and anybody can do it. And it doesn't require that you're sitting for hours on end, and, you know. So those are the dharmas.
That's a meditation practice.
That is your meditation practice. Yeah.
Japa
and kirtan.
Not everyone can even sit down.
Kirtan is when we're chanting all together, like with harmonium or drum or cymbals. That's kirtan. Everybody chants together. Or japa.
Hmm. What's the main difference between if you do japa on your own, or if you do it as a group, is there most of a big difference, or do you still get the results doing it on your own?
Well, whenever you do things as a group, you take on a group mind or group consciousness. It's intensified. It's far more powerful. You know, 10 minds are.
For each person,
10 minds are better than one. How many people? Yeah, and it becomes, the whole becomes greater than the sum of the parts. So if you know, for example, if we have a collective thought and we share a thought and we all put that thought out, it is far more likely that this thing will take place, because we're all focused on the same thing rather than if one person did it.
Well, I'd be the complete opposite, though. I'd find it far more easy to do it on my own rather than having the distraction of other people around.
That's a preference. That's a preference, and that's fine. But that doesn't deny. I mean, any religion will tell you that congregational practice is far more powerful. Every religion tells you that. Why do they all go to the mosque? Why do they all go to church on Sunday? Why do we go to the temple at 4 o'clock in the morning when we're in India? You know, there's reasons for these things. Because everybody's there. It's a congregational energy.
The phrase they say, yeah, geese fly further in formation than by themselves.
Correct. Good example. Geese fly further in formation than by themselves. I like that one. Mm. And in which lifetime were you a goose? Let me think now. We're probably all geese. No, Catherine won't be a goose in her next one. No, she might be a cat.
Yeah, I hang out so much with a cat.
Oh God, I hope you don't become a cat. Just don't think of a cat at the time of death. Oh, I miss my cat. There she is. Is that Catherine? Sure looks like her. I talked to a client today from Laos. You know Laos?
Mm-hmm.
And she told me they're Buddhists. And her family swears that she is the reincarnation of her grandfather.
Which is the cat?
The girl. The girl is a reincarnation of her grandfather who had... I said, so when did he die and when were you born? It was like 20 years in between. But they swear that that is the grandfather's soul. Because I guess things about her remind them of granddad. Okay, so those are the dharmas, kala, and karma. Well, we've talked a lot about karma, really. We kind of covered that action reaction.
With japa.
Yeah.
The word japa, as you said earlier, japa means birth, but japa removes karma. Our
correct.
Death and life cycles, or birth and life, and death cycles.
Yes, the way karma works is, and you will generate, just like we were talking about this person and his near death, you generate good karma, you generate bad karma. As long as you generate karma, you must come back. You must. To do what? To enjoy and suffer the effects of your karma. There's a beautiful verse in here. Anishtam mishtam mishram cha. Anishtam ishtam mishram cha. Then this explains this three kinds of karma. Ishta means desired. What you want, ishta. So anishtam means not desired, bad karma. Anishtam ishtam, desired. Mishram cha. Mishram means
mixed.
So there's three kinds of karma. So you will come back. So in order to get off the wheel of samsara, you must neutralize your karma by chanting japa, as long as it's the right japa of God.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to chant japa with the right mantra that's going to neutralize. Then you can neutralize the karma. And you must then not generate further karma. So how do you not generate karma? We've talked about this many times.
You give up the fruits of your stuff to God.
Right. You offer everything to God, and when offering everything to God, there it generates no karma. So with that attitude, this is for you, I do this for you, but at the same time you can't be attached to the result. Because some things work, some things don't work. You can't be attached to the result. If you're attached to the result, you didn't offer it to God. You know, why are you so invested in it if you offered it to God? Right? So, that's how you don't generate any further karma. So in the meantime, you're talking to God, worshiping God, praying to God, doing your japa, doing your kirtan, and that's wiping out the karma, the existing karma.
So what's a good mantra to meditate with?
Well, the Maha Mantra is the best mantra to wipe out karma, Hare Krishna Mantra. So we're going to chant that now. That's the Maha Mantra, the great mantra.
How many mantras should you do a day?
Depends how serious you are. How many hours of mantras do you do a day?
I do about an hour a day.
That's good. That's solid. That shows sincerity.
Break it down into
Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur, who was born a Muslim and became a great devotee of Krishna, chanted 300,000 names a day. Took 17 hours.
Yeah.
But he was a renunciate. I mean, he didn't do anything else. He sat in his cave and he chanted.
He sat in which?
A cave.
Well, he had a little bhajan kutir, a little hut. Now, here, you'll enjoy this. You know what one of the Sanskrit terms, kutir, means hut. But there's another term for hut in Sanskrit. Vatika. Vatika.
Vatican?
Vatican. Vatican comes from Vatika, which means hut. So have you been to the Vatican? Have you seen the hut in Rome?
Pretty nice.
Interesting, huh? Did we make a wrong turn here someplace? All the garments and all this and all that, you know. They should take the garments off these priests and cardinals and put them on the deity, on God, where they belong. Because they get a little confused with the hierarchy, I think. Okay. Do a little bit of chanting.